I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer and try Peloton risk-free with Peloton Rentals at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How are you, Maji?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yo, bro, like, it's a pleasure, Maji.
Thank you.
How do I say your name?
Junaid.
Junaid.
I surely never tried for it.
Do you know the maddest thing is, yes? Honorable shout out to Shilla as well, who helped put this together, yeah?
Absolutely.
Enough times she'll say to me, oh yeah, like, what time what time are we booking in Junaid or whatever? And I'm thinking, who's, because in my mind, I'm thinking it's a girl.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Oh, Junaid, I'm like, right, what? Like, what's a buff thing? What? Have we booked it on buff thing? Yeah. Then I realise, oh, no, it's a Don. Like, okay, well, cool. Like, cool. Sometimes, obviously, you must get that mixed up sometimes as well, though, isn't it?
Like, people think. No, it's the first time I've
ever seen you. Wait, it's your guy, yeah?
Yeah, it's my guy, yeah.
Have you ever said, yeah, I'm going to link Junaid, yeah? And then, like, someone's thought, right, like, what?
I'll be honest, bro, no.
Oh, okay, all right, good.
See, exactly, never. I've had random pronunciations of the name.
Okay. Because of the way that it's spelled.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, especially Spanish, I've worked with a few Spanish colleagues, and they say, Jay, but her, innit? It's a Junaid.
Right, okay.
Which I prefer in Spanish as well. It sounds sexier in Spanish, isn't it? Junaid.
Junaid. I hear
but,
that.
Yeah, bro, girl, first time, bro. But yeah, it's all right, man.
Oh, well, listen, man.
Love, innit? Sorry to disappoint you. No. Man coming with one leg and one arm. No busting.
Listen, man. Look, there's, like, we're gonna have an interesting conversation. There's so many things that I wanna ask you.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm gonna, like, really get, like, personal in your life and stuff like that. But there's just a lot of things I just wanna just on a life one talk to you about. But obviously the majority of the people that are listening to this or are watching this wouldn't think, like, who is this guy? What's going on here? Let's paint the picture. Before, like, you had the situation with your arm and leg, yeah. What was going on in your life? Who were you? What were you doing?
I was a normal East London boy, man. So working, married. I got two kids as well. So yeah, just trying to make ends meet best I can. That's what I was doing. Working. I've been doing recruitment for the last, like, 13 years, so working recruitment, being on the agency side as well as the internal side. So that was a big part of obviously just working with time and that. COVID was a blessing, so I was working from home at that point.
Right.
I'd actually taken a jump, just that in terms of what the situation was when everything went bang, I was at a point in my life where I would say I was doing recruitment, work was going well, family, young family, two kids. The wife was happy for once. Gym, I loved my gym as well. I was big into my gym. So going gym, like, literally sometimes 2 times a day because, I went through a journey of losing weight. The original name I had was Thick to Slick, which some of my boys take the piss out of me sometimes. So the original Instagram name and YouTube and all that was Thick to Slick because I went from, like, 16 stones down to, like, 12 and a half stones over a period of 2 years. So I went through that. And that, you know yourself, going to the gym, it becomes a big part of your life. So that was a big part of what I do day to day. Motorbikes was never a thing I was into.
Okay.
Yeah, so bike life, like superbike with my boys. Yeah, literally every weekend in the summer, out on bikes. In the winter, chancing as well sometimes. Yeah, that was me. I was a happy-go-lucky guy, man. There was nothing, I was healthy. There was no, I had no allergies, no, like, doctors often look at my case and they're like, right, so what's wrong with you now? Like, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing. I've had what I had. It's caused this now. But before this, I had no allergies. Before this, I was on no medications. I'm only on medications now. I was perfectly normal, man.
What type of man would you say that you were? Like, were you like, I know you said that obviously family balance, all of that type of stuff, work, gym, whatnot. What was your temperament like on just a normal one? What type of man would you say you were?
An honest one?
Yeah, honest.
An honest one. I reckon I'm just an honest guy, man. I've never been one to fight. I've never been a fighter. I'm always more that guy, hence probably the reason why I'm in recruitment. I always like to negotiate myself out of situations, and I find myself a bit of a talker. A family man, a naughty Muslim boy, I would say.
Right.
Definitely, right? So from an Islamic point of view and just a religious point of view, I wasn't religious at all. Going out and doing all the things that I shouldn't be doing. That was a big part of my life. Yeah, I don't know how to say if I was a strong guy mentally, because I'd never been put in a situation where my mental strength had been tested.
Right.
Obviously, people have those close friends and family and loved ones who pass away, and you have that grieving cycle when those people pass away. But has anything happened to me personally where I can say, all right, my mental state was really tested? I've always been a family man, because of how my family's been run in terms of my mum and dad and my sisters. So I'm the eldest of four siblings. I've got three younger sisters.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've always been a mummy's boy. I'll say it straight, right? I've always been a mummy's boy. But having those younger sisters and those girls, it was a really a female orientated environment. So I have a very soft side to me as well.
I'm a mummy's boy as well, man.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you. I'm a mummy's boy. I got a great relationship with my dad still, and there's a lot of me in my dad. No, there's a lot of my dad in me, in the way that he operates and his temperament and whatever else. Definitely, but yeah, bro. I'm 100% a mummy's boy, bro. It's mad.
See, where I'm honest, where I'm opposite to that is I'm not close to my dad.
Oh, right.
Yeah, if anything ever happened to me, it's mad like this. I won't jump too many steps ahead, but even when all this rah-rah happened, which we'll get into, I'm sure, when I woke up, I wanted mummy.
Right, you know what I mean? First, straight away.
Yeah, I wanted mummy. Daddy was there, and dad, I got upset because I didn't get along with my dad, and I saw how upset my dad was. It hit home, the way, because me and my dad argue a lot, but seeing him the way he was when all that happened to me, that first few months, I got a bit closer, but then when I come back round, it was back to, mummy, innit?
Yeah.
I don't have respect for dad for a number of reasons.
I'm gonna get into that a little bit more. Yes, sure. Also, by the way, if you see me type, I'm making notes. Yeah, because I don't want to leave here and think, rah, I didn't ask that or I didn't, do you get what I'm saying? So, okay, now paint this picture where things started to change a bit for you. Well, I say a bit, but like talk me through that first day where something was a little bit wrong.
Okay, so September, what date was that? Newcastle United, the game Ronaldo came back. I think that was 20th of September 21. I don't know, some point in September.
Put it on the screen.
A week.
It's a screen. The screen's not on, is it? It's all right, it's cool.
So a week before that, I went to a house party, right? And a couple of weeks before that, there was quite a few birthday parties. Our boy Jamal from my bike group here had his birthday party. My cousin had his birthday party. So there's a lot going out, right? and I'll tell you why I say that in a minute. So a week before that football game, I started getting a twinge in my right knee, behind the knee, like a muscle twinge. And I thought maybe it's just twinging because of the football I'd been playing on the weekend before, five-a-side, the twinging because of that. So that twinging started happening. But then a week after that, went to the United game on that Saturday, and on the way back, so I went to that football game, my kid's first ever United game at United, Old Trafford, and on the way back, that twinge turned into almost like a burning sensation right under the right foot, right? Burning to a point where I couldn't even sleep with a duvet over my foot because it was too sensitive. So that pain started. So I got out of bed and I was like, so got back from the football, drive back, got out of bed and I hit the floor and I'm like, right, what's going on? So at first I thought, yeah, it's just pins and needles. It'll go after maybe half an hour or so. No, it didn't go. Then went downstairs and I could still walk on it a little bit, but then the foot started swelling a bit as well. So foot started swelling and then I was like, right, I need to go and get it checked out. So I first rang the GP and GP basically started in the GP routine, that book an appointment, come in, blah, 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 right? So I booked that in with them. That didn't go nowhere. Now tell me, Chucky, you asked me one question, but I might have gone ahead a few steps here.
You've gone ahead a few steps.
Yeah, of the story. Should I just carry on?
No. Go back if you want. Yeah. Like, go, bro. If you feel like you need to go back, go back.
Yeah,
bro.
No.
I want to know everything.
Yeah, nice. No, yeah, so that's the main thing. That was the foot pain was the main thing.
Right.
That kicked it all off.
Right.
And that foot pain, like I said, I played five-a-side football. I sprained my ankle a couple of times, but nothing like severe had happened the day before or on that day.
Yeah.
It just came on and it started like gradually getting worse. To the point I went to the GP. and they didn't know what was going on, so they told me to go A&E. So I went A&E, and A&E again.
Could you walk though? Still
crutches.
Yeah, okay.
So at this point, two weeks into the pain, I was on crutches.
Wow. So yeah. That it kind of progressed kind of quick then.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, so I was on crutches within a couple of weeks. I was on crutches. And they couldn't figure out, so I went A&E, and they thought maybe, because it was foot pain, and it came from nowhere, they thought maybe it's sciatica.
Okay.
Right? So at the A&E, I remember, they said, right, Mr. Ahmed, it's your sciatica nerve. So I'm like, well, what should I do? They said, well, try this and the stretches. To be honest, I wasn't really listening because I knew it wasn't sciatica. Took some painkillers, went home, tried the stretches, nothing happened. Yeah. So then I thought, right, rags, I'm going to go to my booper. Because I had a booper from my work. Actually, I went through a booper from my wife's work, yeah? So I went through their booper and I was like, let me go see a few people privately and see what they say. So now we're talking around maybe into January time. So January, I start seeing a few private people in my local private hospital. First, I see a muscle specialist. He doesn't know what's going on. He refers me to a nerve specialist. He doesn't know what's going on. He refers me to a back specialist. He doesn't know what's going on. They refer me back to another specialist. He doesn't know what's going on. In that time, this is like January, February time. This is taking up into end of February. You know what I mean? So then I'm thinking out of avenues. So I've tried acupuncture.
Right.
So I thought, rags, let me pay for acupuncture privately. So I've paid £100 a session. Acupuncture had like maybe 10 sessions. Nothing. It hasn't helped. Because I thought maybe acupuncture will help with the nerve pain. Maybe it's nerve. But no, it's not getting any better. The burning sensation is still there.
See the burning sensation, yeah? Was it like, would it become more extreme and then decrease? Or was it just sort of like, a flat line kind of, just the same type of pain throughout? It just didn't fluctuate at all?
Yeah, I'll say it was the same.
Okay.
So most of the time it was the same, like, If the foot was ever touching anything, then obviously it felt a bit worse. But I wouldn't let it touch anything for it to feel worse because I didn't want that pain.
Okay.
So it was always there.
I know obviously it's not even nearly the same, but I guess that feeling of like when you do have pins and needles on your foot and you put your foot on the floor, you can almost feel that like sensation more in it. So if you've got that continuously, which is it's not like a pins and needles type thing, but that type of pain, obviously you're going to want to just keep that foot off the floor as much as possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And also the other thing was swelling. So I chuck a pair of trainers on, and by the end of the day, it was a balloon, to a point, right, I shouldn't say this, right, but I'm going to say it, I don't care. I was left foot braking and right foot accelerating, because the pressure of the accelerator is always softer, right? So I could press the accelerator because it's soft, but I couldn't hit the brake hard if I had to hit it hard.
Right, okay. Because
that's too much pressure.
So you would use that?
So I was left foot braking, right foot accelerating. So that's why I can left foot brake, but anyway. So that was happening, and that took me up to maybe very much April May time, until I finally saw a guy who said to me, "You've got something," again in that same hospital, he said, "You've got something with long-term pain syndrome," is what he called it.
Okay, what's that?
Well, it's exactly how it sounds in the title. It's just where, and I Googled it and I researched it, and all it says is, it's where the brain is constantly sending pain signals, or you're getting pain signals constantly from an area of your body to your brain, and it can't be stopped.
Are you putting it on the screen? How do I say that? What's it called? How do I say that? I'll just put it on the screen. People can kind of decipher that for themselves. Okay. Chronic persistent pain that carries on for longer than 12 weeks despite medication or treatment. So it's just the brain is just constantly just... Yeah. And you can't...
Turn it off.
How did you feel when they told you that? Did you take... Because I know, like, before when he was telling you that... Like, the other guy was telling you sciatica or whatever else, you kind of just flicked off and was like, I just know it's not that. But when he told you that, did that hit a little bit differently? Or not really? Did you still think, nah, man?
So, imagine you searching for an answer for something, right, and no one's giving the answer, and then suddenly someone's got the answer. How would you react to that person?
Do you know what? That's an interesting question based upon the answer that has been given. Because I think that there would probably be, you know, like if you said to me, you know what, you've got A, and then they gave me the mad scientific word, then I think, like, obviously I'm taking that mad scientific word. But if a doctor basically said to me, you've basically got long-term pain thing, that would take a long time for me to process, because it just sounds too simple. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean the brain is just saying that I'm just in pain? Like, I feel like I would find that extra difficult to accept than maybe the scientific terminology. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish I had the chucky brain on when he said it to me, because I was like, right, someone's giving me a solution to a problem. And because this pain was, mate, it was not allowing me to go gym. Like, I couldn't go and play football. I couldn't, but my kid plays football 3 times a week, and we always used to have a kickabout beforehand, before he went and done his proper training. Couldn't do that because I couldn't put any weight on it. Couldn't do shopping, couldn't do nothing. So finally someone's given me a bit of light that, but I don't know exactly what it is, but everyone else so far has said, we don't know, maybe, we don't know.
But you've
know,
got
maybe.
One person that one said, person it's said, this,
yeah,
I hear that.
Yeah? So he said to me, and I'm thinking, right, finally someone's got an inkling, I'll take the inkling.
Right, I hear that.
I'll take it. And so his initial, and it was also not just that chucky, it was also the solutions he came up with. Like, the first solution which I went for was an injection. So your spine, it's got two parts of it, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but there's an outer and an inner layer. Right, so the first or the second injection, could be vice versa, was on the outer layer, see if that cures the pain. If that doesn't work, then we'll do the inner layer, the injection. You're fully awake. They basically inject this with a certain numbing agent which should help the pain, right? So that was the first two solutions that we're going to try. Done the first one, waited 2 weeks, didn't work. The doctor said, all right, now that didn't work, we'll try the second solution. At this point, he then started planting the seed. There is a third option, right? And that third option was the one which I... So the third option was a device inserted in your back. And what this device was, it was a size of a pacemaker almost, inserted in your lower back. And this device would then have two metal wires that would go inside the spine, right? And those metal wires, along with that device, would almost act as a diversion for the pain signals. So when that pain signal came from the foot to that device, or to your where your nerves run through your back, that device will pick you up and send a signal as like a buzzing sensation. So it'll be like a, you almost get like a slight buzzing, shocking sensation instead of that sharp pins and needles sensation. So I had that second injection, and then he started talking about a third option, and the second, obviously the second solution didn't work. So I then went ahead with that device to be inserted.
And what was that process like?
So what our process was, it was a day operation, done the whole pre-COVID checks because they were still going, oh, no temperature, come in the next day, blah, blah, private hospital. So I went downstairs, signed all the forms. So, you know, you sign your life away, like, this happens. So signed life away. And they told me beforehand, what we're going to do is they're going to insert a device. So a day before that, actually, the lady from the company that designs the device showed me the device, showed me the little controller it comes with. So the way the device works is the device goes in you, but you charge it from outside. Do you know, like, this new iPad?
Stations.
Like a belt you tie it on, right, and it charges it, plugged in, charges it, okay, while you sleep at night time. And there's a remote with it which can change how strong that buzzing sensation I spoke about comes back to you, how strong the feedback is, right? So she had a chat with me the day before, Boston Medical, they're called, to talk about that particular device. This is what we've done. Researchers gave me a few leaflets to read through, which I did. Everything looked hunky-dory, right? Looking back now, it was a sales pitch, basically, to make sure I was happy, I was going to go ahead with the device. But I was still in that mindset of, shit, that this sounds like it might work. My wife in the background was like, have you done enough research? But I kept blanking it out. I was like, right,
I just need something that's going to get rid of the pain,
fix this pain.
Yeah.
And like, in the background now, obviously thinking about it now, like, you think, oh yeah, shit, she was saying to me, like, have you done this research, that research? But I was like, no, I'm going to go for it, being a stubborn man as well. I'll go for it, I know what I'm talking about. So anyway, so waiting for day procedure. Chucky, they woke me up, again, thinking about now, they woke me up during the procedure to see if the device was working.
You what?
Yeah. So, and now, like, now I'm talking to, obviously you're here, you'll know why now, I'm talking to legal people, when they bring these sort of things up, like, I'm like, right, yeah, they woke me up. Because what they did, they woke me up to make sure the device was working. And she, like, imagine I'm lying down here, like, but I'm flat on my stomach, innit? They're behind me, working on my spine. They woke me up and going, like, is the device working? And she's come around like a mad scientist with a laptop, and she's doing all this shit, like, activating the device. And she's like, is it working? And I'm like, yeah, but it's not going. And I'm half out of it. You know, they give you the anesthetic and stuff. I'm half out of it. I'm like, yeah, it's working. And then she's like, oh, is it working now? And I'm like, no, it's not working now. And
that is mad.
Then I heard a doctor. I remember now, I'm thinking back, I heard a doctor saying, oh, and he pushes it a bit. And he's like, is it working now? He's asking me.
Wait. So wait, are they waiting for you to be in like some type of pain or some like...
So they're on the other end, they're pushing the foot. They're pushing the foot to see, right, are you getting a buzzing sensation? And is the device working? Bruv, I'm half out of it.
Yeah, of course. Like, you're twisted, bruv.
Yeah, I'm out of it. Trust me. I'm out of it, bruv, fully. I'm seeing in Bulldog, bro. I'm out of it.
Yeah, I hear
camp. You hear it? I don't know if you've been damned. Trust me.
So and, what are you telling them at this point? Fam, I just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back out again, woke up again. And they're like, okay, Mr. Ahmed, like, everything's gone fine. How do you feel? Have a cup of coffee, cup of tea, blah, blah. Here's a couple of leaflets. Waited a couple of hours for me to feel a bit better. Come back to it. And then, yeah, wife picked me up and I went home the same day.
Did it work?
No. Simple answer. So I waited a couple of days. I thought, well, firstly, I was really sore because I mean, the stitches down below there. So I was quite sore. So I was trying to walk on it. I was like, nah, this hasn't worked. So I called him, I think, again.
Did it made no difference at all?
No difference at all.
Wow.
Yeah, so then obviously I'm a bit pissed. And I'm thinking, like, shit, what's going on? Why is it not working? So then I rang the doctor up and I said, like, it's not working. They've spoken to Boston Medical, the rep, and they've booked an appointment for me in 2 weeks' time for us to review what's going on, see why it's not working.
So all the while you're still like, so you've got this device in you and you're still going through the pain.
Yeah.
And so at that point, like, obviously your life is just completely just changing by the moment, right? Because I know you mentioned obviously football, like all of these different things that you can't do. So you're just actually getting used to, or trying to just get used to what's happening in that moment, right?
Yeah.
So then what next?
A week and a half later, my wife is screaming. She's like, she's seen it this morning when I hit my head, there was blood on the floor. I thought she was going to pass out. So she was like, I'm not cleaning your bandage for you. So my dad come up and clean my bandage for me. The bandage on the back.
Oh, okay.
You better clean your bandage, like after a week at least.
Okay.
To make sure everything's, like when you have a scar, like this is good advice as well. Like when you get an operation or have any type of scar, make sure it's not smelling, make sure there's no redness, because that's a sign of infection.
Okay.
So if your scar's ever smelling or like it's going to smell nasty, you'll know, and it's red or pussing, yeah, you've got an infection.
Yeah.
So reason why I say that is my dad checked it, there was no swelling, I got a picture of it as well, no, because I took a picture on purpose, no swelling, no nothing, right? So that's like a week and a half after, and then I basically then,
by the way, is this what's this here you're showing me?
Attached
in
spectral wave writer, spinal cord stimulus.
That's the one.
Okay.
Crazy. Is the Boston one come up?
That I typed in from Boston Scientific.
Yeah, that's their one, then, yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah. So yes, so I got a temperature chuck. So I call you Chuck.
I'm hoping. Yeah, it's calm.
Sorry. Yeah, so 2 weeks after, like I said to you, the bandage was all clean, everything. The reason why I said that is because I got a temperature. Right, so I was starting shivers. And I figured, shit, something ain't right. So I'm shivering, right? I'm like 3-4 duvets, like those typical Asian, like we call them gumballs, yeah, like thick duvet over me. I'm like, yeah, mumsy bringing me hot water, but I'm shivering. And I go to my missus, I said, this ain't right. Like, I shouldn't be shivering. Firstly, like I can't be moving a lot anyway. I was literally in bed only playing COD for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't be moving, but I couldn't stay still. And I rang up the private doctor hospital and I said, look, this is happening. They go, you've got to go to your local NHS because we're closed at the time it was happening. So I went private to my NHS hospital. Temperature, yeah, high temperature. I don't know what high temperature is anymore. It's like 40, is it 40 degrees, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
38?
Yeah. Like high temperature. What is considered as a, like a
normal body temperature is 37.
So you, I would say like 40 something.
Yeah, 40. Yeah, 38 to 40 in it. So it was around there. Went into hospital with the missus. Obviously that mindset, oh shit, we're going to be here for ages. A&E. Sat down, ordered a favourite chicken and chips, yeah? Munch.
Which one? Which chicken and chips? This is necessary.
Favourites.
Oh, favourites?
Yeah, I was in Essex, innit? I was in East. I was in like...
Ain't favourites one of them like kind of dim PF... You know, like, yeah, you see the like PFC, perfect fried chicken and that, like them kind of dim ones. Ain't it one of them ones? Favourites.
Yeah, PFC...
Favourites is...
PFC is more my lane than Bo's side, I think.
What? Yeah, but ain't favourites in that kind of lane than one of them... Years, yeah, but favourites is one of them dim ones though, innit?
Like Tennessee though.
What, yes, like like Tennessee. That's like one of the dim ones. Is that one of your favourite joints?
How you going to call me East and try to call my chicken and chips dim? What's your West London chicken and chips?
Bro,
you don't have one.
It was Tennessee.
Exactly, you don't have
that
one.
That was Tennessee. It was Tennessee.
South got...
But then, and we, well, obviously, we've got a young Sam's as well. You know what I mean? Sam's was our thing. Sam's was our team. To be
Sam's
fair.
Is in East now as well.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam's, you could get like 9 pieces of chicken and 2 chips, bare wings for like £3.
You old.
It's like, yo,
you old.
Where is this coming from? Yeah. But you know what? When you're young, you know what I mean. But yeah, I'm more of just a KFC don now. No, actually, cheat meals. That's my thing now. Cheat meals is a new thing. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, that's all right.
Just
to put it straight, our thing is Dixie.
Dixie.
Yeah. South is Morley's, isn't it?
That's so pigeon, isn't it, though?
Yeah. It's not pigeon.
Yeah.
Up north is pigeon. But Chuck Angelachi, yeah, going off subject. I remember in uni, yeah, in Birmingham, my boy's taking me to one chicken shop, yeah. The fillet was like this thick and this big. I was like, fuck, this is definitely pigeon, bro.
Yeah, bro, I hear that. Bite into it and just bare water comes out of it.
Bro, the fact it's £2 for that fillet, no. It's pigeon. Anyway,
Anyway.
So we had chicken and chips.
Right.
And that's the last thing I remember. So I got hyped day, I passed out. And like my wife says, I was in and out conscious, but it all kicked off from there. So up until that point, yeah, that's literally the point where everything just went, basically.
So, well, you literally just passed out.
Yeah,
in and
passed out. Yeah, and then everything started from there.
So that must have put your wife in a mad predicament, actually. So now, when you've gone to the hospital and that, and they're like doing operations on you or whatever else, she's obviously almost like. She's kind of next to kid, innit? So she's going to obviously be the person who's going to be, you know, saying what they can do, what they can't do and whatever. At what point did you wake up? Did you wake up and everything had changed then? Or did you have an opportunity for them to talk to you about what was happening and what was going to be the solution going forward?
Yeah. So I woke up. So I spent 6 weeks in a induced coma.
Wow.
And then after that 6 weeks, I woke up on a shitload of drugs. Big up NHS. In UCLH. When I mean shitload of drugs, I mean, like, I was turning around looking at a clock, and I don't know if you've seen Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
But in Alice in Wonderland, I always say this, in Alice in Wonderland, there's a clock where the 12's up there, the 3's up down here, 6 is there, 9's there.
So you were spazzing.
I was looking around and I was like, raw, what is going on? But so to say I woke up at that point and knew exactly what was happening is probably a lie. I was awake, but boy, I didn't know what was going on. I think not until I got out of intensive care, which was, so induced coma 6 weeks, intensive care probably for another 2 months, and then I went into a normal ward. So yeah, not until I got to normal ward I knew exactly what was going to be happening to me.
What was happening for you to pass out now, like, and for you to be in that coma? What did they find out that you had, like, what was actually happening?
Yeah, so at Queen's, what had happened is at that point they were talking to my wife saying he's got sepsis. And we're giving everything to him that we would usually do to a sepsis patient, but he's not getting better. Like, what's going on? So the best way to put it, Chuck, is they threw the book at me at Queen's, basically. They were like, so we're giving everything in the book to cure sepsis, but it's not working. His organs are still going into failure. They gave me chemo. They gave me 2 rounds of like the strongest chemotherapy they can give. And if you look at my Instagram or my YouTube, you'll see, like, I was like, do you know that Russian spy that was a skeleton? I looked like that guy, yeah? So when I woke up, so they put me through chemo, but what was happening, and then they took my bone marrow, because they put my bone marrow to a panel of hospitals in London, which included King's, UCLH, and there was like 2 or 3 other ones that my wife knows. Because they couldn't work out what was going on, my bone marrow went to a panel. And then while someone on that panel, Jessica Manson, over at UCLH, she saw the bone marrow and done her tests, and she said, he's got another disease called HLH. Now, you will have to, for the life of me, Google HLH.
We did. Do it. Pull it up on the screen.
Because I can't pronounce it. So HLH is basically where your immune system just shuts down.
It's called, I'm gonna say it right now.
Yeah, you got this?
I believe I do. I sure. Don't know.
You gotta go before it, go. No, before it comes up, innit?
It is phagocytic lymphmohistioseptis.
Cytosis.
And hence the reason why we call it HLH.
Flipping out. I know. What was it?
Jackie tried.
Hemo. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Hemophagogetic.
Cytic. Yeah.
Cytosis. Oh yeah, that's mad. You know what? When I read, like, when I saw it in the notes, to me it just looked like a jumbled words. Yeah. EA, you studied. What did you study?
Biomedical science.
Yeah. So he was able to say it straight away, and he was breaking down exactly what part of it. In fact, come here quickly, just quickly, and then say it, what each part means, because you broke it down to me. Where is it? Okay, primary. Huh?
It breaks it down. So
no, but you. Okay, you broke it down differently to me, though.
Yeah, hemo's blood.
Oh, yeah, hemo's blood.
Phagocytic.
Phagocytic is the cells that eat.
So you're basically your white blood cells.
So it's basically your white blood cells.
And then.
Lymphmo is relating to the lymph.
Lymphatic.
Oh, yeah, the your system, basically.
Yeah.
And then the histiocytosis.
It says excess of macrophages.
Excess of macrophages. What is that?
They're a type of white blood cell.
It's a type of white blood cell.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lot.
Mose, if you don't mind me asking, did you study that as part of it at any point?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So every doctor said to me, they touched on it for like maybe two assignments.
They did. They
wrote two lectures, but it never came up in our exams.
Yeah. See it there. So that's how rare this thing.
That's
is.
How rare this thing is. Yeah.
Please, just for people who didn't hear, he said, "What you say? Two lectures, but it just never came up in the exam."
It's mad, right?
So yeah, so
so she knew I had HLH.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes, "That's why they then had to." No, before that, Chucky. Sorry. So before that, they needed to take the device out because the device was still in my body.
Of course.
Right. So I was getting sepsis. Not curing it, before they start throwing the chemo at me, they threw the device out because they thought, okay, that device, it must be the cause of the infection. That's what they said. I'm not saying that. They said that, and they took it out, but the infection was still not going. That's when they sent the bone marrow off, and then they found out it was HLH. So then Jessica Manson was like, right, we need to treat him here at UCLH.
Jessica Manson?
So she specializes in this disease and research around this,
right?
And she was only one of a few doctors who had seen it. It's very common in children.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is very common. So, since
big up Jessica Manson.
Yeah. So, since putting this information out there, and I do TikTok lives, I've had people say to me, I've had a kid who had HLH. He was, or she was, 6 months old or 3 years old. Like, it's common in kids, but I've had no adult come to me and say, yeah, I've heard of it, or anyone come to me and say they've heard it in an adult. And that's why they gave me 20% chance. At that point, they told my wife I had 20% chance of living. So they basically had come to say goodbyes. Now, my dad had started ringing up my cousins and saying, like, guys, it's not good. And they started, family had started coming around, which I now find out from stories. My family had started coming around and saying, like, my dad was sort of saying things like, oh, he had a good life though, innit? Like, his kids, he's seen one of his kids grow up a bit, like that sort of stuff. So they had to get me over to UCLH as quick as possible, but I wasn't stable enough to move because I was on a lot of equipment. And my wife was saying today, because I banged my head this morning, guys, for you to just to find out how much of a numpty I am. I banged my head on the cabinet, and so we had to go to hospital. And at the hospital, a lady was coming in for a CT scan on all the pipes that I was on, not all the tubes that they put into you. I was on those same sort of tubes. But seeing that, my wife broke down and said, "That's how you were." Like,
okay,
yeah. So like 1 minute you went for an operation to have that device taken out, and next minute you came back out like that. Like, I had all the pipes in me. tubes in me, like wires coming out left, right and centre. So for her, just for her, like, she goes to me, yeah, it was a lot, like, yeah, because they thought I was gone, innit, they thought.
Yeah, it's a massive roller coaster of emotions that they're going through. One minute, you've got a pain in your leg, your foot, you're going in and out of hospital and that, then all of a sudden, someone gives you a solution, that doesn't change, and then all of a sudden, like, you pass out and that, and then next minute now, your missus is being told that, you know, her partner and the father of her kids is about to, like, die, like, I could only imagine that's just a lot to process, isn't it? And then also on top of that, I think this is where it's different for a wife as opposed to, like, just a mother and a father and that, because I think your wife lives with you, she's with you all of the time, you have kids together, she's obviously going through her emotions of, like, losing a partner. Obviously, parents go through the emotions of losing a child and that, but then also the wife is taking on the emotions of everyone else. And then I can probably imagine that a lot of the time people are asking your wife questions, what's happening, what's going on with this, what's going on with that, and it's like, you know, you're cool with saying it once or twice, but then when you have to say it over and over and over and over again, as well as you're, like, starting the process of grieving, it's mental. Yeah, it's mental.
And it was hard for her. We have spoken about that part of it as well, because I wanted to know, like, I've just been nosy, just so who turned up. Do you know what I mean? Like, when people found out who turned up,
who turned up?
yeah, the family I was expecting to turn up. The friends that I was expecting to turn up, I would say it was 50-50.
Was there anyone out of your friendship group that, like, in all honesty, you not only expected to turn up but really wanted to be there, didn't come?
Yeah, there was I reckon there was one cousin especially, I would say. So yeah, me and him have been tight for years. Like, he knows my bike group, my bike boys know him, so I don't mix my bike boys with my, like, school boys or my family. Like, my families, sometimes they mix and they come in and out, but I don't mix all my different groups together for just the way it works out. And even my bike boys know one or two of my cousins. And yeah, Faye, he turned up when I was in that loopy stage. He turned up, because I wasn't myself at that point. I was crying and I was, like, trying to get to the terms of the fact why I was working out like a vegetable. And, like, the last I remember, I was walking into hospital and now I can't move anything. He turned up for the first time, but then after that he didn't turn up at all to come and see me. Whereas other people there was also people who I didn't expect to turn up who came and knocked on my front door, who I hadn't spoken for years, because they got it through the grapevine. But that, I'm going to say, yeah, one particular cousin let me down, man. And I gave him, do you know what it is, Chucky, even afterwards, like, me and my boy here, we spoke about it, that I gave him, what do you call it? I gave him an olive tree, what do you call it?
Olive branch, yeah.
Well, I gave him an olive tree, you know. I gave him a tree, bro. I said, come and chat to me. But it's not, I don't feel like, and, like, I'll say openly here, like, I've had counselling for my stuff as well, yeah? And my counsellor gave me one piece of advice, which I'm happy to share. He goes, Junaid, the where you are now, you can be, what's the word I'm looking for? You can put yourself first. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to put other people first. The shit you've gone through, you don't need to put anyone else first. You put yourself first. But even then, I went out and said, look, bro, I miss you, innit? Come, like, I want to see you. I didn't put in that exact words, but I gave the hint.
Did he come then?
No, still hasn't come.
Mad.
Still hasn't come. So, so, you know you love your barber, innit? But I had to change my barbers recently. And we have one barber as a family. So this one barber goes to all of us. So he goes to my cousins, brothers, my cousins, like, he goes to everyone. He makes mega P offer. But now I decided to go to him as well. And the mad one is, he came through, I think, came through on Wednesday, and that cousin had said something to him as a message to me, but my barber's been like, I ain't telling him, tell him yourself. Because I think it's now got to a stage where it's almost embarrassing to turn up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you get to that point where you're like,
yeah, he's left it so long that
like, you leave something too long, you're like, shit, how do I approach this now? You have an argument with a boy, or rags, you put it to a girl context, like, you don't say something when you're meant to or do something, it's gone too long.
No, I hear that still. I hear that. Like, do you still have a desire to want to speak to that cousin?
Very good question. Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. Because then you start thinking about, what did that person bring to the table? Do you know what I mean? Like, when you start thinking, oh, I've done this, I've done that. Oh, he's a bit younger as well, Chucky. Like, I'm 36. He's like 27, I think he's 28 now. So I was already in that journey. I was in that London life, and he was starting to become a city boy.
Right.
So I introduced him to the city boy lifestyle, and I got out of it. He was still in there, but I was still in that life because of him.
Mm.
And then all the shit sort of happened, and we're in between because he stepped away from city life as well. To give you context in terms of how we were, we had nights out and we've done stuff together. And, bruv, I don't know, man.
Yeah, these things, it changes a lot of different things in your life, man. Like friends, family, like so much different things. I'm going to get into that. I'll get into that in a bit still. But like, so now, see, when you was like now conscious of what was going on, at this point now, you're like, they've had to cut your leg off and your arm, yeah? Or do you have an opportunity to have that conversation on whether this was something that you wanted?
Yeah. So when I woke up, everything was still intact. So what had happened is, because of the blood infection, they had to give me blood diffusions. But what happens is, when they gave me the blood diffusions, the blood didn't go back to certain parts of the body, and that caused gangrene.
Okay.
So the left arm was just where the elbow is, the right leg was below knee, and the left toes had gangrene. So at this point, I was a vegetable, so I was still coming around to things anyway, so I wasn't fully aware of what was going to happen. I mean, my missus had started mentioning the fact that there might be amputations needed because of the state of certain body parts. But at that point, my main concern was, I've still got my right hand there, and there was like little scars. I got little scars where the gangrene wanted to start, but it didn't go the whole way. Mm-hmm. It just started tinkering, but it let it be. So at that point, it was just gangrene, and I was like a vegetable. So I was starting physio to get my strength back, to just be able to even sit up, because I couldn't, like, literally, when I say I was a vegetable, like, I couldn't even do that. Like, my fingers were just there. Chucky, I couldn't even do the buzzer. You know, in the hospital, you get those buzzers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in intensive care, your nurse is right next to you, like, constantly, like, literally, you go nurse, and he or she is there all the time. But when you get off the intensive care into a ward, they've got a ward of 20 odd patients with like maybe 6 or 10 nurses. So first come, first serve, when you press the buzzer, you know what I mean? Mm. But I couldn't press the buzzer.
Oh, mad.
So imagine my mindset when I'm there. Like, because first I was like, when I was in intensive care, to my mates and to my missus and family, I was like, right, if I get out of intensive care and get into a normal ward, it's going to be sick. Like, in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, I'll get out of intensive care. It's the next step to recovery. But then when I got to, when they moved me, yeah, from intensive care to the ward, my wife was with me until late, right? They moved me at like 10, 11 at night time. So they took me across this long ward. So UCLH, they've got like the main intensive care wards, and then they've got like, on the right of that, there's a tall building with like 21 floors. Each ward, each floor is a different speciality. And the ward I was on was the infectious unit. So got in there at 11 at night and they give me a buzzer and they're like, there's no one. I'm used to a nurse being there on call all the time. And they're like, right, this is it. And my wife sees on my face, I'm upset because I'm thinking, right, I can't press the buzzer. No one's here all the time to look after me. I'm suddenly coming to that first stage of like, I'm out of someone's hand. I've got to start doing things. Because that's the first step of going away from. Now, I'm like, as I'm talking now, I'm realizing actually that that was the first step to my recovery process, from them, me relying 100% on them, to them saying to you, me, right, Mr. Ahmed, it's time now to start. What, where is this going to lead to? So when I got to that ward, is then when I started realizing, right, this isn't working, that isn't working. Why is that totally black? Why did I keep changing my bandages? When they took off the bandages, and that's when mum and dad and the
was
wife,
the arm just was the arm completely like just black, like
yeah, it was black, yeah, it was cold, do you know, like when you touch ice, literally ice, it was cold, no blood in it, it was black.
And same with your leg as well.
Yeah, so my right leg was below ankle was all black, and my left toes were just black. So the question was the first question was right leg, is it going to be below knee or above knee? Because that bend that you have in your elbow and in your knee, like it makes a huge difference. We'll come in, I'll come on to that in a minute. So was that going to be below knee or above knee? The next question was, is the ankle going to stay? Are the toes going to go? Is half the foot going to go? What's going to go in that one? And the next question after that one was, the left arm, is that left arm going to be below elbow or above elbow? And that was a big one. And that became the that became more apparent as the conversations went on and on, because again, hence the reason why I said about that elbow in the elbow bend is you then start thinking, right, if I lose my elbow, what am I going to stop being able to do?
Well, can you even comprehend it? Because I think, you know, sometimes, yeah, when you have like all your faculties, I think this is the case for most people, yeah, like we don't realize how much of like this plays a role in our life until we lose something, yeah. And like you could just lose the ability to just do just one just your thumb. You lose your ability to use your thumb, yeah. You think, oh, like, well, I'll be all right without my thumb. All right, cool. You pick up your phone, you go send a quick message, and you're like, oh shit, I can't even, because you use your thumb to message and that. It's like your big toe, for example. It's like you lose your big toe, and then your balance is way off. We, you know, you like something happens with your leg or whatever. Let's just say, for example, you can't like walk, and then you start thinking about like I always refer back to having surgery on my knee. I had surgery on my knee. I was out of the game for like a month and a half, and it's like the that spontaneity is gone. Like I can't even. I mean, I can still be spontaneous, but in a different way.
Yeah.
But it's like the way that I'm used to being spontaneous, I can't be spontaneous like that anymore. So I think like for me, my mind could tell me like some of the things that I would not be able to do without having an arm. But until you don't have one, I think it's just a completely different experience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always been, like you asked me earlier about what I'm like a person and a bit about me. And I've always been that person that, I don't take no as an answer, innit? No, I just don't take no as an answer. Like, my brain set doesn't. And again, it comes back to my work as well. I've always, it must be an East London thing. And my dad, I'm just a salesperson. I don't take no for an answer. Like, I will get a yes out of you somehow. Maybe not today, maybe tomorrow. And the same for my own situation. I don't want to say no that I can't do this. That's why I do stupid things like motorbikes. And I'll do stupid things on the.
What, now?
No, not now, then. Oh.
Okay, I was gonna say that is techie,
right? It's gonna happen.
Yeah. You can get that. Happen. That's gonna happen.
Yeah,
brother.
Trust me. 100, brother, trust me.
Man's gonna be on the bike.
Trust me. Man's gonna be back on the bike. Big ass super bikey. Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, we're gonna get there.
Yeah.
We're gonna get there.
But I was always a person that try it first and then we'll see how it happens. And that brought me good situations and bad situations.
Yeah.
Right. We won't go into that. Yeah. So, but I will always try something. And that's in my nature. So when they start talking about the amputations, I wasn't, and like, I ain't bigging myself up, yeah, but I was never the first thought was a negative one. The negative thought was there, but the first thought was, okay, how do we handle this? Yeah, you get me? Like, it wasn't the other way around, because I know a lot of people, like you said, you lose a thumb, or like I've dislocated that knee pain is horrible, the ligament pain. So like you feel like the worst first before the best of it.
100%.
But I was never like that. I was like, right, this is going to happen one way or the other. I've got to deal with it. But it comes up to that point I was making about, I didn't know whether it was going to be above elbow, below elbow, especially my left arm. And when they said it was going to be below elbow, above elbow, because they can't solve it, basically the gangrene was too high. So basically the thing with gangrene is they give you two choices. Some people stay with it. Like people live with it, but it can spread. And the other thing is, what are you going to do with like just dead, it's dead muscle. Like it's literally just, it's there. So there's no point in keeping it anyway, because I couldn't use it. So that was the first question they asked is, you can keep it, but it's going to be like this.
Mm.
So I thought, well, what's the point? So then they said, right, it's going to be above elbow. And the reason why I keep repeating myself, the reason why that is I'm going to say it is, for example, let's say gym, how do you do bicep curls?
Mm.
Yeah. How do you do bench presses? Yeah, how do you do deadlifts? How do you do deadlifts? Mm. Right. If I had the elbow, if you go to fall over somewhere, like if I lean over, I go on my knee. If I'm getting off the floor, if you get off the floor, fine. I haven't got two hands, but it's easier to get off the floor with two elbows than it is to get off the floor with two arms, two hands. So I was always trying to think of the best case scenario rather than the worst case scenario. Through the process, what can I save that I'm gonna be able to use? So it was a blessing that my below knee was saved, and it was a blessing that my whole left foot didn't go, only my left toes have gone.
Right.
So these are the only bad boys, two fingernails I've got now, basically.
Yeah.
So man, that's when I found out I wasn't amputated when I woke up. I had to work for it to get amputated.
Okay. And then obviously now, then that's a whole another transition or period in your life.
Yeah. And then that's when I was tested the most mentally, because I tried to stay positive for the whole process, but then I would have days where I would be upset in myself in terms of, why has Allah brought this on me, right? Like, why has Allah chosen to do this to me? Then I had thoughts of, I'm Muslim. And if you haven't noticed, and in Islam it says no tattoos. Yeah, I had a full half sleeve on the left arm, right? And God suddenly decided, right, brother, I'm taking your left arm. Then I'm thinking, shit, man, he taught me a lesson, taking my left arm off me. Then I started thinking like that, right? Why have I been so bad? Like, why have I not been a better Muslim? Then, I spent most of my time in intensive care with the Quran on in the background, because I found peace in God at that point. Like, I'd never turned to him before, and I felt like a lot of people kept saying to me, he's testing you. Like, he's tested you for a reason, because he loves you. And I was like, right, I use that to my advantage. Like, yeah, I'll use that as much as I can. So that helped a lot. But then I would break down the form of, right, what is this going to mean for my kids? Like, the whole football thing, how am I going to play football? How am I going to pick up my littlest one is two. Nearly three now. Then it came down to, let's be blunt, the wife. How's the wife going to perceive me?
Mm.
And where I struggled a lot during rehab, not rehab, during less, now I said rehab, less than rehab, while I was in intensive care and in the unit at UCLH, what I struggled a lot with was understanding my wife needs to live her normal life.
Mm.
Yeah? So I will struggle with the balance of thinking, right, my wife's out there. Like, my wife, I'm punching, innit? My wife is fit, yeah? I'm fully punching. I'll say it, my boy say it, I say it openly, I'm punching. So,
honorable shout out to the missus.
Yeah, shout out to the missus, man. So, I'll be getting paralyzed. She's out. She's having a coffee with, who's she having a coffee with? I should go out for dinner. I should go to cinema. I should go for the spa day. If I was out, normal bodied, she does that anyway. I know, I've never stopped her. She does that anyway. So I was going through a phase of thinking, right, I need to stop being like this, because we were getting into a lot of arguments. Then I get into a circle of, I'm going to lose her because she's going to see a weak man as well. Like, the man's not going to be able to look after her when I do come out of hospital. So I went through all these emotions while I was, even before I was amputated. But then slowly, when the drugs started wearing off, things started coming back round to me.
Did you, and like, even, you can answer this in two ways, yeah? So like, the past and also now. When did this happen, by the way? When did all this happen?
So, what, the amputations?
Yeah, the amputations.
Amputations happened probably around September, October time.
So not even that, not even long ago at all.
Yeah, last year.
Okay, I'll just ask it as a solid question, like, do you feel less masculine?
Yeah, I do, yeah, 100%. Because, oh, fucking hell. So, bro, there's certain positions everyone likes, and I would say bluntly, that you feel like you're in control, you know, in that situation, and I can't do anything no more.
Mm.
I said it as blunt as that, man. Like, there's certain things you can't do no more. You got to, like you said earlier, everything becomes a process. You lose a thumb. You suddenly think you can't use a phone. I lost an arm and a leg. Everything, nothing's the same no more. So I can't do the things I used to do. I try to do them, and I've got that again going with that. I like to try things and explore things. Come on, what my point is going to be. I try to do the best I can in the situation and process it and use things around me as best as I can. But it has proven to be difficult, but I'm coming around to it. Because also the thing, what I was going to say is, I want to do everything now. Do you know, like I said, you said to me there, well, bruv, you're riding bikes now. Bruv, if I could, I'd be riding bikes now.
Mm.
I've already gone for my car assessment. I'm going to be driving a car soon. Like, I want everything to be happening now.
Mm.
I've booked a holiday. I shouldn't be going on holiday yet. Booked a holiday. You know, I don't want to wait. I want to do everything now. But
you want to live your life. You want to live your life, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
For me and the kids. Mm. And my personal trainer, I keep saying to me, bruv, like, I go into gym. Yeah, I have my down days in gym, innit? And it's not even a case of, oh, I haven't lifted as much as I want to. It's a case of, bruv, I haven't been able to walk backwards today.
Mm.
Rather small things. I haven't been able to. Bruv, I used to jump 20 inch steps. Box jumps, but I can't even step onto that now.
Mm-hmm.
I can just about step onto the 8-inch one.
You see, like, with the masculine side of things, it's like, obviously, as men, yeah, you grow up with this, like, mindset of what we have to do as men, innit?
Yeah.
Like, provide for the home, this, that, carry this, whatever. You know what I mean? We've got to be strong, we've got to, all kinds of stuff, innit, yeah? But then for people who feel less masculine are maybe the ones who at certain times feel like they can't do that for whatever reason. Mm. Do you get what I'm saying?
Mm.
And if you have been like quite a masculine person in your household and you've come out and like your circumstances have changed, I'm just curious to understand what it looks like in regards to the household after that in your own mind. Because you can still be, we all have levels of masculine and feminine energy and all of these type of things. But when you go home now, you know, do you feel like you can't, there's certain things, because you can't do certain things, you can't say or implement certain things anymore. You can't really, you know, like, or being scared to say certain things because you're going to lose your missus. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like, you want to, like, have this argument, or you want to say something, you want to just speak your mind, but you're thinking, right, you know what, if I'm being this guy, I'm not even going to be able to, my business is not even going to stay.
Nah. Rags, bro.
even from the sexual aspect well, it's like, that's another thing, at some point you probably would have thought about a little bit, innit, like, that how differently that looks like. Yeah. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think putting it in that context, I don't think like that.
Okay.
At all. So, and if anything, I'm the opposite of that.
Right.
Like, I get pissed off with people saying, oh, let me do that for you, or let me do that for you, let me help you with that. Like, yeah, I'm the opposite of that. Like, I want to do everything myself. Because, so for example, when I got home, right, then we had to think about, oh, how are we going to go upstairs? How am I going to go upstairs? How to get to, basically I redesigned a lot of part of my, a lot of things in my house to allow me to not feel like that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So my bathroom is redesigned into a point where I don't need no one.
To me, that's masculine.
Yeah.
Someone who comes home and says, all right, boom, do you know what? Can't really do this and that anymore. So I'm not gonna be in this house making everyone do things for me and that. There's just no way. So obviously you need help though at times, and still accepting help is a good thing, innit? But to be able to turn around and say, you know what, yeah, nah, I'm implementing this and I'm doing that or whatever, so I can do my own thing, to me is a very masculine trait still.
Yeah, and I respect that as well for you saying that, because I mean, I've never thought of it like that, but it was like, do you know what it is as well? It's it was a case of no one was helping me, Chucky. Like, the way this system works, to put it bluntly, if you've got savings, if you've been a good, again, yeah, I've been a good husband, a good adult, I've saved money in the bank, I've put money away. But if you've done that, the government doesn't want to help, the government won't help you because you've got too much money.
Yeah, because you have to start paying for it. Yeah. It's mad. You know, like, sorry to take this away from you a bit, yeah, but this, we had the same thing with, like, my granddad and that. So it's like my granddad was becoming, like, just not able to do certain things or whatnot, yeah. And because he had money in the bank, they was like, firstly, they was like, nah, can't really. But then when they were almost forced to do it, the amount of bread they were trying to come for, well, after he died, was mental, bro. Like, yo, they wanted a crazy amount of bread from him.
It's disgusting. It was, and it just made me, do you know, for a good reason, it got me pissed off, bro. I was like, right, you ain't gonna pay for it. Rags, I'll pay for it myself. But I'm not gonna lose that independence. Keyword being independent. Like, I didn't want to certainly rely, because especially in rehab, you get certain people who are like, oh, this has happened to me. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to me? Blah, blah. Feeling sorry for themselves. But then the opposite end, you get the other people who are like, nah, like, we're here. This is life. Adapt to it. Make the best of a bad situation. And I was in that category. And so even from rehab, I knew what I'm going to have to do to get home and be myself and not change things. Because, again, while I was in a coma, bruv, my car insurance was up for renewal. My house insurance was up for renewal. My lease was due to be paid every month. And the lease I was paying was dumb. My wife couldn't afford that. So then it was like she had to take control of doing all that stuff that I was doing at that point. So in my head, I was like, right, I need to get back to getting that back under my control, because that's what I do. Like, I take care of all of that in my house. Basically, bills and all that, I just deal with it. I just find it easier. So yeah, so coming back to the money situation, the reason why I say that is I had to do everything myself, and that helped me incorporate things into the house that made me independent. And I guess coming back to what you said, I guess made me feel a bit more masculine. Mm. And one thing I want to say also while I'm still talking is, bruv, things that used to be easy, I tell you one hard thing to do with one arm, grating cheese, bruv. Bruv, you don't think about it, bruv. I love cheese, grated cheese, bruv. Bruv, it's mad. Do you know what I've had to buy? You're not laughing. Bruv, I've had to buy zip bags. I've had to buy zip bags and, like, sit there with, like, the thing in, like, a vice, almost like a vice in my kitchen with a grater thing in it, because I don't want no one else doing it for me. The grater thing's in the vice, innit?
Okay.
And it's there with a bag on the
side. I don't know. I think I think that's cold still, but I think you're missing. Are you trying to do it? Would you, like, hold the, what type of cheese grater have you got?
A metal one.
Yeah, and it, like, it stands up like that and it's got.
No, it's a flat one.
Yeah, so I got a cheese grater, yeah, that's like, because it's got different sides to it, innit?
Yeah, different sides.
Oh, I know which one you've got. Bro, I'm not going to lie, you got it wrong. Like, what you've done is cold, huh? No, this is, hear what I'm saying. No, not the parmesan. Yeah, he's got the palm, just the one-sided one.
Yeah, one-sided
I've got
one,
the one.
Yeah. One-sided one.
I've got the one where there's like, you can grater it in different ways. So you can get like the long bit or like the super small defined and then whatever else. What you could have done is got one of them because it stands up and then use the chin like this and then grater it, bro. Yeah, that's light food.
Bro, that slipped your chin. You know, your chin is, your nose is gone, bro. Look at my nose. So you, bro,
why yeah, gone, bro?
But you just strengthen the chin in the process, bro.
You see what I mean about processes, though? Because there's actually a board specifically made for amputees. So what this board is,
right,
is it sticks to the surface. What's that called? A marble, yeah?
Yeah.
The surface top sticks to it. And it's got, one side has got the grated bit, so you grate it into like a box underneath and it slides out.
Right.
One side's got four spikes. So do you know when you're cutting like tomatoes or mushrooms, you stick it on there and you just...
Right, okay.
Otherwise the thing moves, innit?
Obviously, then obviously you must come across like quite a few different gadgets and that stuff. Yeah. Which is good. That's like, those things are good because it's... It helps you, it speaks to you being able to just have a bit of independence and do things for yourself. Even if you have to find an alternative way to do it, you find a way. Like and the thing is, we can't even make too much of a thing about that because with evolution, we always find different ways to just do things anyway. Do you get what I'm saying? Once upon a time, people weren't grating cheese with that anyway. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, they was grating cheese in different ways. Like, you find different ways to do stuff in with the circumstance that you're in. Going back to just the family element of it though, so the kids, what was that like sort of maneuvering your relationship or like adapting your relationship with your kids? Did it change? Were there like anything that had changed?
So my who was turning eight at that time. And so he wasn't allowed to come and see me in hospital because my wife took it on herself, which I think was the right decision, to not let him see me at my worst. So he did eventually come and see me in hospital. But once I was able to at least press the buzzer in the hospital, you know what I mean? I wasn't totally just a vegetable. He came and saw me. But it was hard for him. And he did take it hard because I'm closer with him than my youngest one. I always say my youngest one, the devil child, is my wife's, and the oldest one is my one. The good one's my one. Yeah. So, it was a case of just explaining to him that it's not going to be the end. I mean, the key thing for him, as you can imagine, was, "Daddy, are you going to be able to kick a ball with me again?" Do you know what I mean? Like, the key thing for him was football. The other thing was, how are you going to play PlayStation with me? Which I'll come on to in a minute. How are you going to play PlayStation with me? Because I just bought a PS5. Before I got ill, literally 2-3 weeks before, I bought a PS5. And we started playing. He's like, how are you going to play PS5 with me? But I've made it in such a way where I've made it. On my little one, I don't think he's not going to know any different.
Yeah, because he was so young.
He won't know any different. My older one, I've made a point, because I've noticed it in him, he wants to spend as much time as possible with me.
Mm.
Now, like, I've made it a point that everything I do, I try to do with him. So I've created a studio stroke office in my house. I've got a desk on this side. He's got his desk on that side. He does his homework when I'm doing my work. He does his homework in there. If he's going to play football, I've tried to go and watch him play football as much as I can. Even though I can't kick ball, I'll try and watch him play. He wanted to go to cinema. It was going to be hard for me, but I done it. To watch Mario, yeah? When I watched Mario the other day, that was great. So I've just had to adapt. Again, with everything in my life now, I've had to adapt the way we used to do things and still make them fun for them and incorporate it into them and not make them feel like anything's different.
Have you also, you've naturally also had to adapt the way that you see yourself as well, right? Like, because the first time looking at yourself in the mirror must have been like a bit of a challenge as well, right?
I still don't look.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, I don't like to look in the mirror, yeah. It makes me upset. I don't look in the mirror, yeah. We had a big mirror in front of my bed when we rearranged my bedroom for me to come home. And I got that mirror moved. Yeah, I love it. So, it's alright though, man.
The playing with the kids, COD, because you mentioned COD before, I don't know if you play COD with your youth and that, but like, how do you play PlayStation with them now then? Like, what do you just like?
Yeah, so we got my sister got me a one-handed controller. It's not even a controller, it attaches to the PS5. If you look at my socials, basically it's a rig and it attaches to the PS5 and the left analog stick is almost strapped to my leg, so when I move the whole controller, the whole left analog stick moves, and on the back, the left L1 L2 is right here.
Okay, we're looking at it right now on the screen. Which one is it?
You won't find it.
You won't find it?
Trust me, guy.
Well, how did you get it then?
My sister got it from China.
A guy
3D prints it, but he doesn't sell them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You type in, I don't know, type in maybe PS5 3D printed one hand, I don't know. One hand.
Put in PS5 3D printed. Yeah, just do that. Go down. Cause
I think it might be that one, you know. There you go.
Which one is
it? Yeah, that one on the left.
Which one? Like far left?
Or left and right, the same thing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's all the same thing, yeah.
Oh, cold. So yeah. I get it.
So that left analog stick attaches to my leg with a strap underneath.
Yeah.
So that's stuck. And then I'll put elastic bands underneath it to make it tight so it's not loose.
Yeah.
So when I'm moving around, for example, COD, I'm moving around COD like this. And the right analog stick's to aim.
Oh, that's cool.
Right, you see those blue buttons on there? Yeah. They're pressing the arrow keys on the left hand side.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they're pressing the arrow keys, and on the back of it, the L1 and the L2 are right next to the R1 and R2. So it's right there. So all on one side.
That's dope.
So my sister got me that.
How techie are you with it?
No, it's hard, man.
Yeah, but you've got better with it, though, right?
It's muscle memory, innit?
Yeah.
If anything, it's muscle memory. So I've started to get the hang of it, but bruv, these kids on COD, bruv, oh my God.
Yeah, they're bruv. Crazy. They're crazy with it. And they're so, bruv, I can't play it, bruv. It's too quick for my eyes anyway.
But it stresses me out.
Yeah, I know, yeah. It stresses me out as well. But I'm not a gamer like that. But when I decided I'm going to jump in the game thing, and I was just getting smoked left, right, and centre, bruv. I jumped in COD for the first time, smoked. Then these youths are just chatting bare shit on the thing and that. That was getting me mad, bruv. Like these little kids just chatting shit. And I didn't even have a controller of the thing where I could chat back to them. So they're just chatting shit about man. And I couldn't even give it back. Then I tried the Gears of War thing. That was going 100 miles an hour or whatever. I was getting smoked at that. I said, you know what? Fuck it, bruv. I'm just playing golf. I bought golf. And then I just stayed with that. Smacked the ball one time. You get what I'm saying? That's me.
Golf on a PS5 or golf in real life?
Nah, golf on the PS5.
Oh, okay.
I just thought, you know what, fuck all of that. Like, these are doing all that. I just went on and just, you know, obviously you just scroll, find games and that. I just bought a golf thing. And then that was me.
Funny guy, man. But it's a thing with Call of Duty. You're going a bit off topic now, but Call of Duty, you have to turn, what's it called? We have to turn crossplay off. Because these kids on, mate, imagine you use a mouse. They're using mouses. How quick are you with that mouse on your PC?
Yeah, well.
So imagine they're literally with their mouse, they're there like with red pointer just shooting you out.
Yeah, they're too techie with it. Well, okay, anyway, like, what do you do to keep your mind balanced? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that like you would go through a roller coaster of emotions, yeah.
Mm.
Maybe even on a day where you're not having so much of a good day.
Mm.
Like, what kind of things do you do to keep your mind back? Do you go through, like, counselling? Do you have therapy? Do you have, like, is there certain things that you do or a place that you go that, like, kind of helps you just balance your emotions?
But I've got into my editing, man. Like, editing, like, videos and doing the social media stuff, it's a weird thing. So I've set up my office now, like, double screens, the Mac, and I've got all my little gadgets and stuff. And once I start editing, I zombie out. It's weird. I find it soothing, editing. But the other things I do, it's just, I'm back in the gym. I go gym 3 times a week with my personal trainer. Like, gym will forever be my place to go and just get away from things. I'm not driving yet, so my PT is sick, bro. Like, he's made it. So my PT, he wasn't my PT when I went on that weight loss journey the first time, but he saw me as that guy, innit? Like, do you know when you start going to gym on a regular basis and you just get to know people because they see you more than once or twice? They're like, yeah, this guy's serious. He saw me go through the whole process of losing that weight.
Mm.
And he used to always single me out like in the gym, like, oh, what are you up to today? What do you need help? You should spot me for free. I'm not charging me no money. Give me advice about food and all the rest of it. So when I got out of rehab, even while I was in rehab, I started doing physio, and the physios weren't doing it for me. So I called in this guy, and I was like, look, you need to get me back in the gym, innit? Bro, the guy didn't big up Jermaine. He didn't want to take a paycheck, bruv. He was like, I'll do it for free, innit? Like, I pay him, obviously, but he said, I'll do it for free. So me getting away with him 3 times a week, that's my getaway, man, the gym. And also, it was important for me to find a gym that didn't have riffraff. I'm sorry, but I couldn't go to a gym where riffraff were just staring at me because I was of what I was doing, how I was doing it, what I was doing. Because my exercise is, again, coming around back to having to adjust to this way of living now. I can't do the usual exercises. I have to do the basic things yet. So I'm still learning to walk with no toes.
Yeah.
I'm still learning to squat because I can't bring my leg, my knee all the way over my toes to squat. So I'm still learning to squat. The simple thing I'm learning, still learning. So I didn't want to be in a gym like that. So big up, also do a quick plug to PT Studios in Hainault in Essex. So this gym's got a sick setup. So their setup is PT only. So like a barber chair, the PTs pay a rent, and the PTs can bring their own clients.
Right.
So in that gym, everyone is paying for a PT, and PTs are not cheap. If you've had a PT, you'll know PTs are not cheap. So you won't get riffraff easy in that gym.
You obviously went through a period where you like questioned a lot of that. Like, talk on that a bit.
Yeah. And can I cut? I'll talk about that also, linking that back to what the point you just made. Religion is also my getaway now, I would say, because I find it peaceful. Now like, if I little things like I go to the cemetery, I try to go and see people that have passed away. Like my grandma had Parkinson's really bad, and she lived with us, and but I used to feed her and help her and all the rest of it, and I even helped bury her, but never went to the graveyard once since burying her. Then I got uncles in there who was really tight. My cousin lost his dad really young, and my cousin's been going every day, every week, sorry, maybe twice a week to go and see his dad. So he said to me, like, bro, I find it peaceful, come with me. And I went with him once or twice, and yeah, I find it really peaceful. And even going back to the question you just asked, now doing being closer to God and doing things like Friday prayers in Islam, which I missed Friday prayers for years. Small things. I don't pray 5 times a day. But I've stopped doing things like drinking. I've stopped doing things like, yeah, I was doing a whole lot, not eating halal meat. Like, I was doing all the rest of it on nights out as well. So stopping all of that and just finding peace in thinking of him, it's just changed me inside. I don't pray 5 times a day, but I feel like something inside me has clicked to say, be thankful, and I thank him as much as I can, and I also pray to him as him or her as much as I can. Now fuck that, I pray to him as much as I can. So yeah, man.
Do you remember your dreams?
Go ahead, finish your question. Is that the question? Because I will go into a mad one about dreams.
I was just going to ask you what your dreams look like sometimes.
Now?
Yeah.
Just now. I don't... it's mad. So I've started having dreams recently because there's certain medications my cousin advised me to take that have helped me. But my dreams consist of things that have happened before when I was better, rather than things that are to happen. So things that have happened and I'm remembering, and I wake up and I good memories and bad memories. And the reason why I asked you to finish your question was the dreams during my coma. Bruv, mad.
Elaborate.
So for example, I was I used to have a waterbed that wasn't electronic, so it used to do like this moving motion all the time, every few seconds move. The reason for that is elderly people, they get back sores when you lie down for too long, so they keep the bed moving. I'm bed bound now for quite a few months, so the dreams, well, at the beginning I was going to be bed bound, so they kept me on it, but the dreams I was having was I would be on a island and I can see myself out of body experience on the island. Not even an island, like jetties. You know, like the jetties you walk on holiday, they're moving in the water and everyone else is talking to me, but they're on their own islands and they're talking to me. And then I asked a guy, right, in rehab, because he asked me a similar question, like, bro, did you have dreams while you was in a coma? Because he was in a coma as well. And I go, yeah. And he goes, did you ever have the dreams about being on like an island or on water? And he goes, yeah. And the reason why he done his research, the reason why we got those dreams is because we was lying on a waterbed.
Okay.
The waterbed is the reason why we're getting that. Another crazy dream I would have is I'd be in this laundrette, for weird reason, this laundrette that was near my house that I used to pass when I was in school. So when I was in high school, we used to go to the chicken shops. The chicken shop used to be next to the laundrette. So we used to walk to that laundrette, past the laundrette, to go to the chicken shop. But the dream I kept having was, I was in this laundrette, I was locked in this laundrette. People are in this forest opposite this laundrette, but I can't get to the forest. But people are visiting me in this laundrette upstairs. And I can see like the T-junction where this laundrette is, the road actually is there in real life. But I can't see nothing else but laundrette, some people in the forest, they sometimes visit me, they sometimes go, and there's also a fridge with cold strawberry yazoo in it. Yeah? And the madness is, right? But I can't get to this strawberry yazoo. The reason why I can't get to, I don't know why I can't get to this strawberry yazoo, but the madness, Chucky, is my wife, I told my wife this story, well, I think she heard it on a podcast I did on my side with my boy, and she said the reason why he was having that dream is because when he was still awake but on the machines, he kept saying and writing. So when I had the tubes in my throat, apparently I still could write, but I couldn't say because the tubes were in my throat. But I kept writing, I want a cold yazoo.
Okay.
I kept saying that to them, but I don't remember that. But I was having those dreams, right? Now, did those dreams happen? Was that happening and it wasn't a dream? Mm. Or, yeah, it's all muddled, bro.
Yeah, it's mad.
Madness.
Yeah, it's mad. It's
That's
mad.
Why I stopped to ask you, well, why are you asking me now? What part of the dreams? Because I thought you were going to ask me about the coma dreams.
Oh, no. I didn't even know you had dreams in the coma, yeah, you know? Yeah, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Madness.
I thought that you, like, I had a neuroscientist on the pod a while ago.
Yeah.
And we was talking about consciousness and that. And, like being on, like, euthanasia, for example. It's like the difference between dreaming and then, like, being on euthanasia.
Yeah.
Is interesting because when you go to sleep, you have a concept of time that you've kind of like gone to sleep.
Yeah.
But when you have euthanasia, you don't have a concept of that. You just completely knock out and then you wake up and you're like, rah. Like, you're a bit delirious. Like, wait, how is that how long it's gone and whatnot? And you don't really, it's like almost like probably what it's like to be dead. You don't think that there's nothing.
It's just, yeah, it's black.
It's black. But then when you're sleeping, you sometimes have. But I thought that being in a coma was almost like being on euthanasia. Like, it's just nothing.
I mean, look, that 6 weeks in this coma plus the 3 months in intensive care and all the drugs, it's all mixed into one.
Yeah, I hear
so
you.
I, you know what I mean, so I might have even been awake and that was happening, and I see it as a dream.
Mm.
But and then I keep thinking back to one dream where there's a doctor. Bro, do you know, like, these new Google 360 cameras?
Yeah.
And you can do that angle where everything's like a bubble, everything's around you. Like, what's that old Dizzy Rascal tune where he's, oh my God, in his video, he's shouting at this bubble, the 360 cameras around him. I forgot what that Dizzy Rascal tune, well, which one was it? Oh my God, it's going to bug me. But anyway, it felt like I was in this bubble and there's a doctor, everyone, like, the doctors are looking at me. And like a little bug in the middle, but all around here. I was fucked up, man. I'm tripping out myself now. I think I smoked too much pot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you still smoke?
I stopped smoking fags, and so I didn't want to get back into that cycle. So I got hold of myself a pen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a vaping pen. But it's doing me well. Do you know what it helps with? Do you know what it is? Chucky, I get a lot of phantom pain.
Is that the pain where it's like it's in your arm but it's not in your arm? Yes, basically.
So especially at night time, when the thing is, when your brain wants to switch off, it starts thinking of other things that it wants to think about, and guess what, it wants to think about
the
phantom
arm.
Pain.
So
there's two types of things. There's phantom pain and phantom sensation. Phantom pain, I get a lot in my left foot. I'm getting it right now as we speak, like the toes are hurting.
Okay.
Like, really painful. My right foot, luckily I don't get a lot. But at the beginning, I'd be walking, yeah, and my right foot would just start hurting. The worst one, it would start itching. My right foot.
Oh, yeah, I was going to... I had that in my notes, actually.
Yeah,
the right... Yeah, like, how does that... See the itch? Yeah, how does that... What? How does that work? Like, how do you get rid of that?
Literally by looking at it, making the brain realise, bro, you're tripping out, your foot's not there.
Yeah.
Because what's happened is, they describe it in rehab, the physios, they put a model up of a face. They get taught in physio in hospitals that the face, in your mind now, your nose is here, your ears are here,
mm-hmm.
your neck is here. They use that in their physiology, physiotherapy, technical terms, they have terms for it. But that's what the brain's happened to the brain now. The brain hasn't realised where your nerve endings finish.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, my arm feels like it's about here.
Mm-hmm.
That's called phantom sensation. But what some people, it disappears. What happens is your arm gets shorter and shorter, and then it just disappears or go.
Mm-hmm.
Some people it stays for life.
Mm-hmm.
Some people it takes a year or two. So pray for me, man.
For sure.
Trust me.
Just a couple of more things, yeah? Like, what keeps you going?
The thought of being normal. Like, the thought of knowing that...
What's normal?
Like, one day, this, like... Do you know, you see these people... Like, do you know what it is? Like, people text me sometimes saying, oh, Janae, like, look at this guy on Instagram. Look at that guy on Instagram. Boys do it. And, like, no disrespect to them. I know why they're doing it. But these guys and girls have been amputated for years. Like, right. 2-3 years. I've been amputated since October. Like, I've got a long, long road ahead of me. So what keeps me going is knowing that I'm going to get there. Like, seeing these people, because a lot of these people have got, this is my first leg, Chucky. I'm going to go through, I spoke to my boy this morning. He was in the car with me. My boy, I was in rehab with, he's got a wicked story. He's been out of rehab 1 month, 2 months before me, and he's had 3 legs. So imagine over a year how many legs you're going to go through, because the stump's going to shrink, your leg's going to shape's going to change, you're going to get a better other casting this week for a new leg. So what keeps me going is knowing that these things are going to happen. I started researching into legs in the private sector, because I want to get back into the gym properly and start running. So I started looking into things like bionic legs, legs that have got micro processors in them. So knowing that those options are out there and they're going to get better keeps me going.
Right.
My kids keep me going, knowing my kids want to see their dad get back to that strength or being able to do those things, because there's a lot more that I'm looking forward to being able to do. I haven't done half of the things that I was doing before. The simple things. I haven't kicked a ball at my son in goal yet. Like, I haven't got the balance to be able to go over, walk up to a board and swing my foot through it. Because at the moment it feels like my foot's going to go either flying or that way. It's going to come off my leg. and I'm going to turn into a meme, bro. Man's not trying to turn into a meme. Trust me, you get turned into a meme quick these days. So I'm not trying to turn into a meme. So yeah, but knowing I'm going to be able to do those small things, because...
Your sense of humour is incredible, bro. I promise you, bro. Your sense of humour is incredible. Because I know, like, and adding into the context that this did not happen that long ago.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, you just mentioned just before that, like, sometimes people will show you people that have, like, been going through this either from birth or that they've just had this for years. So I think for a lot of people to even incorporate an element of that sense of humour takes years for them to do that. Like, bro, you've got a great sense of humour. You're super engaging in that. And it's, you said you said that you're a person that you talk your way into certain things and you can get a yes out of. You ain't lost it, bro.
Trust me.
You ain't lost it.
Why do you think I'm still working?
Are you still working?
Yeah, trust me. I got back to work as soon as possible. Bro, do you know how jarring talking about medical stuff for 9 to 12 months gets?
Yeah.
You just want to get out in life and have normal conversations,
right,
with normal people,
right,
who are living normal lives.
Yeah.
You got 4 limbs, I've got 2.5.
Yes.
No matter, let's just talk in it.
Right.
Because my recruitment is just talking to people.
Yeah.
People, like recruiters are probably, estate agents are still worse, yeah?
Yeah.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
Estate agents are still worse, but we just talk in it. We just talk.
Do you know what? As we're doing the sense of humor stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, yeah? We really do give thanks because I actually thought that you didn't have no limbs at all.
Mm.
So when you walked in, I hope you take this right, but I was like pleasantly surprised and in some way just lightly happy. Not like, no disrespect to anyone who don't have no limbs, but like I just thought, oh, do you know what, like, yeah, like you're walking, you're doing, like, do you understand what I'm saying? You got like, yeah, you don't have 2 legs, but you got one. Like, you don't have both arms, but you got one. Like, when you start getting into that process of thinking, oh, like, someone actually doesn't have any, when you see them walking in with something, you're like, nah, you know what, like, you got something and you're making the most out of it with that. Do you know what I mean? Because at first, when I thought he didn't have any, I was like, Sheila kept saying to me, yeah, I just spoke to him on the phone, and I'm just, and in my head, it's baffling my, but I didn't want to be in a, I'm just thinking, how is this? And then you're on road and that. Like, I'm thinking, how are you on road and doing all of these things on your ones?
Mm.
But it makes all the sense in the world. You get what I'm saying? Adding to the fact that you're a person who, one, doesn't, like, say no. Yeah. You're obviously very, you're very persistent, which is always going to help with your recovery and doing things and your experience and all of that type of stuff. And then the other thing is, like, your charisma and your personality hasn't gone anywhere. Do you know what I mean? And like, I think as difficult as it is for you, and I can't even fathom how difficult it is, I think that like, there's so much positive things to look forward to in the long term because of these attributes that you have. They mean something, bro. Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah, they mean something. There's so much people that would have, that, and I'll get it if they did, if they was at home and they was just in bed and they just like, they felt like the world was against them and they gave up on their religion, they gave up on their God and all these type of things. I could sympathize with that. But I just think it's such a testament to your character that you have said that you've obviously got closer to your God, your religion. Also, you've kind of tried to straighten out the situation with your wife in regards to like allowing, like living her life without you like constantly arguing with her and like trying to be a father, but still being a masculine person in the household and not like allowing life to beat you up. Bro, I you don't even understand how much respect I've, like, here, like literally sitting down and having a conversation with you, the more that you talked, just the more that my respect for you just grew, bro.
Thank you.
Honestly.
Thank you.
But bro, listen, man. Go on, sorry, do you want to?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I should sit my dad in this couch, not me. Dad, you got to be this guy Chucky, yeah? You know, psychiatrists, counsellors, bro, they're a waste of time. Chucky will see you for free.
Nah, listen, thank you for coming, bro, and sharing your story and stuff like that, man.
Thank you, bro.
And all the best, and at some point we'll rap again, you get what I'm saying? Once you've like, you know, lived a little bit more life, you know, gone and done some things, had some holidays, done some things, tried some stuff and whatnot, and moving around smooth, then we'll reason again, man. But yeah, thank you for coming, bro. I appreciate it, man. Yeah? Love for listening, everyone, yeah? Thanks.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.